Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Star Trek podcast. So nice, we've got to record it twice. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Benjamin R. Harrison.
Ben, I was just referring to a cold open we recorded moments ago.
Yeah.
That was going through the computer mic again. when I record out of the podcast studio Battle Bridge.
Can we see the Battle Bridge?
No, I'm afraid not.
It is just fraught with danger.
Yeah. Well, if you had put another episode up with the computer mic, I think that would both strain the goodwill of our viewers, but also the goodwill of Adam Ragusea. And we need him, Adam. We need him.
We cannot burn that sound bridge. A lot of people are like, how the fuck? You're like over 100 episodes through this. How is it that you're just now fucking up your audio? Like, these are things that should be, that you should have dealt with in the first 10 episodes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Ben, I'm in Studio B.
Yeah.
Studio B, for those of you who aren't clear on what that is my bedroom.
This is the battle bridge that you referred to in the previous episode.
Yeah.
This is where you go when you separate the saucer section.
When people imagine the glamour of having a hit podcast, Ben.
Yeah.
I think few of them imagine a grown man that looks like me.
By which you mean to say Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah. I want you, fair viewer, to close your eyes and imagine Kyle MacLachlan. And if you're driving, open them right back up again. Kyle MacLachlan,
hey,
in bed.
No, do you. Come on. Don't tell the people to drive with their eyes open if they don't want to.
I've got the mic arm clamped to my bed frame. I've got a laptop in my lap, as the name connotes. I'm chillaxing the most.
Yeah.
In podcast studio B here.
Yeah. Now,
and I'm not using my main computer, and that's the issue. That's the issue with the audio, as it has been for the past few episodes. It's I keep setting the settings to good mic, and the computer's like, no, fuck that. We're using shitty mics.
Well, you have a desktop computer in your main space, and that doesn't have a built-in microphone for the computer to run home to every time you set up a new project. So
when you have the Apple garbage can computer, you don't have these concerns.
Mm.
But when you have the MacBook Air,
yeah,
the MacBook Air wants to use its shitty onboard mic.
Yeah.
Despite my many protestations. So what we did is we recorded a show open 5 minutes ago.
Oh, it was such a good show open, Adam. Oh, God, the tragedy of losing that great show open. I was about to tell an anecdote about a time I saw Jesse Thorne use a microphone. Ugh.
Hey, maybe for our viewers and myself, you might want to regale us with that story again. It's a story so great, I'd like to hear it twice.
It doesn't even bear repeating. It wasn't a story. I was trying to make polite conversation, Adam. I think that what people really care about is Star Trek: The Next Generation, and more specifically, the Slickback trilogy.
Yeah, let's get right into it, Ben. It is Season 5, Episode 11, Hero Worship.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Ben, before we kick this one off, I just want to say that this is the second episode in a row that features a primary school setting, like as one of its main sets. And I think when you're trying to make great and exciting sci-fi, I think it really starts in the schools, doesn't it?
Mm. Interesting that it's a different teacher this time, right? Did that lady lose her gig?
I think Worf might have murdered her.
They just ended the last
buried
episode
her in one of
with,
his holodeck programs.
With him raising a batleth over his head and swinging it down into her chest.
He's murdered people for far less.
We didn't even talk about the fact that Alexander got into Worf's holodeck program in the last episode.
It's probably the safest holodeck program for Alexander to be in of all of the senior staff.
When Worf asked, you know, what program is running, and the holodeck spit back Worf calisthenics, how fucking relieved was he that it didn't spit back Riker calisthenics?
Ugh. Oh, man, that is so much worse than finding porn in the woods.
Yeah. I mean, Alexander's going to have a hard adolescence to begin with.
He is up for that challenge, though.
Yeah. Well, the entrepreneur is looking for a disappeared vessel, the Vico. It's a research vessel, and it was exploring the Black Cluster. And it's missing. It went missing. So they kind of pull up to this Black Cluster, and it's apparently like one of the most ancient formations in the galaxy. Picard's pretty taken with it, and it's not long before they find this ship. And this ship that they're looking for is in real bad shape, Adam. It's like a car with a broken window that got left in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah, it looks like it was tipped forward and then put on a bench grinder for a while. It looks like it was dragged.
It's a really cool model, right? Like they've got the, like, you can see the decks inside the ship that have been exposed to the hard vacuum of space.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best models that we've seen on the show so far during the remastering. It's really great, and you see it up close.
Yeah, and it's really, like, it's beaten up really well. Like, I think that I heard the guy from Mythbusters, Adam Savage, talk one time about, because he worked in a model shop on Star Wars and on Star Trek stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the anecdotes I took away from it was that if you're making a ship model for Star Trek, you can have like three objects repeated on a hull. And if you're doing it for Star Wars, you do two and then the like shape where one of them used to be but broke off.
Because
Star Wars is kind of a more like beaten up, lived in type of ship, typically.
Yeah, Star Wars is more thrift store.
Yeah.
Looking.
A little bit more rusted out, a little bit more, you know, whacked back together. And this ship definitely, like, it feels like it feels desecrated for that reason, you know? Like, it's obviously a model that used to be like really pristine, and the pristineness of the ships in the Star Trek universe makes it all the more upsetting when you see one that's in this bad of shape.
Right. So they scan for life forms and they don't read any, and what their sensors indicate is that the ship is extremely dangerous. Like, a bunch of it is exposed to space. The walls are barely holding up.
Yeah.
But Riker and Data and Geordi, like, they're sent over there to eject the computer and bring it back. And this brings up a question, Ben, which is, like, at what point is information recovery worth the lives of your crew?
I don't know. I also wondered, I mean, we know that they have spacesuits in this universe. Like, why not put them in environmental suits for this, even if they know that there's atmosphere still in the part of the ship that they're going to? Wouldn't it be nice to just have the safety of, you know, being in a spacesuit for that
just in case, because like the entire time they're there, they're worried about, you know, a beam shifting and it causing the collapse of the seal, you know.
This cold open depends entirely on Data and what Data does. So we don't need Geordi and Riker. Like, Data could just go alone, have it be more practical and reasonable for him to do so, and it doesn't affect the story at all if he did.
Yeah, he would also just kind of love to go on a suicide mission every so often, right?
Right. I think he would relish that.
It's an itch he likes to scratch.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and the other really weird thing is they don't seem to consider the possibility of survivors until they hear one.
Stay here, Geordi.
When they're on the ship, right?
Yeah, it's made sort of quasi-clear that their sensors don't detect life forms, but it's unclear as to whether it's because there are none there or because their sensors just aren't working properly because of their proximity to this thing.
Yeah, but after they find the one, shouldn't they, like... There's other decks of the ship that aren't exposed to the vacuum, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So they rescue one kid. And it's a kind of a classic rescue scenario where the kid is pinned under some metal that's making it tough for the transporter to lock on. They've got kind of a hunky guy standing in Chief O'Brien's place, attempting to beam
hunkier
him.
Hunkier than Chief O'Brien?
I know. Can you believe it? This guy is attempting to beam the kid to six bay, and there's a really funny shot of a bio bed and, you know, Dr. Crusher standing there waiting for her patient, and the kid is, like, fluxing in and out. And it's clear that they had him, like, pose on a green screen or something in the position that he would be in if he was pinned under a bunch of metal girders.
That's a fun shooting day for a child actor.
Yeah.
This is not the first time that they've beamed over to a ship full of dead bodies and no one mentions the smell. Like, they basically beam inside a Katrina refrigerator and no one mentions the odor. It should be awful in there.
Adam, as a man who is sitting in a bedroom surrounded by milk jugs full of his own urine, I can imagine that that's an issue that's exquisitely proximate to your lifestyle.
I don't smell anything.
Maybe you've gotten nose blind, Adam. The decision is made that it's too dangerous for Geordi and Riker to be there, and they've got the computer files that they came for. So Geordi and Riker clear out, and Data explains to this kid, I have super strength. I'm going to move this metal thing that's on top of you. And then we're going to run over to the hallway so that we can beam out together. And the kid is like...
Data seems more excited about telling someone about this strength than he ever has been before. He's really, like, embracing the Big Jim Slade part of himself. Like he's ready to Hulk out and prove it to this kid.
Yeah, so he does what he says he's going to do, and... They scramble over to the beam out point, and
Data carries him like a suitcase.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It felt like Data like didn't get his hand up to his communicator quite as quickly as he probably could have if he really cared.
Yeah, he didn't.
He gave it a beat just for the sake of it being extra suspenseful.
Well, this is one take Stewart. This is a Patrick Stewart directed episode.
That's true.
He probably saw what he wanted in the scene and then just moved on.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's a weird episode for Patrick Stewart to have directed, and I feel like at this point we have like a bit of a track record on P-Stew and Frakes in the chair. What do you think? Like, can we do like a comparative auteur seminar at this point?
I don't know if we have enough of a sample size yet to do that, but, and this isn't cutting ahead into the episode, but I just think you notice when Frakes is directing an episode, and it feels like this episode looks like many others on the show. And that's not saying, that's not favoring one director over another. It's just saying that I think that Frakes is a little more flashy with shot composition than Stewart is or is comfortable being at this moment in time. Like, Stewart will go on to direct far more episodes than this, but at this point, it seems as though he's a little conservative.
Right. And I mean, I sort of wonder, like, is Frakes trying to make the case for himself as a director in a way where he says, like, let me put my fingerprints on it a little bit more, and Stewart is kind of satisfied to direct shows in the style of the show?
I've seen everything.
Yeah, like directing for audition versus directing to the project.
Yeah.
I get that.
Like, I kind of think that Frakes, like, based on what we've seen and nothing else, like, I don't actually know how either of these guys think about this, but I kind of get the feeling that Frakes saw himself as potentially having a career as a director, and he wound up having a career as a director, whereas I kind of get the sense that Patrick Stewart is an actor first and foremost and always will be.
I think when you talk about them in terms of how they self-actualize, I think that that's a great indicator for what sort of director you're going to get.
Yeah.
And if Stewart is primarily an actor and he's primarily focused on acting, then you get the episode that we have here with Hero Worship, which is a character piece.
Yeah.
First and foremost.
That's an interesting distinction. Well, so they get the kid back over to the entrepreneur. He's in Six Bay, and he's really upset, right? Like, he's dealing with shit in a way that, like, all of the slickbacks that we've encountered, whether they were, you know, canonical slickback trilogy or just your average slickback.
Ancillary slickbacks?
Yeah. Second string slickbacks. Like, this kid's trauma is much more present, I feel like. He is dealing with the pain of loss and terror in the moment. And, you know, like, I think that we've had other kids that kind of shut down or, you know, dealt with it in kind of peculiar ways. This kid is upset in the way that you would kind of expect a kid to be upset.
It's strange because the slickbacks that we've gotten in previous episodes have been a little older.
Mm-hmm.
He might be the youngest slickback we've gotten, and that might be the reason for this description.
That's interesting.
He is young playing old in a way that feels a little discordant.
Yeah. Well, he starts telling them about the attack that ended with the ship being destroyed, and he tells them about this alien ship that came out of the cluster, and they had like a boarding party, purple helmets, he describes, phaser rifles, he describes, and they're like, Jesus fucking Christ, like, I can't believe some aliens actually did this to a Federation starship. So they start to look into this, and they're like, who could it even have been? Because they don't see evidence of phaser fire on the hull, so they're thinking it's got to be disruptors. And they're pretty sure that it wasn't the Romulans or the Klingons, but they think it might have been a cloaked ship. So they're thinking maybe the Breen.
What would the Breen be doing inside the Black Cluster?
It's just kind of a whodunit. Like they don't have enough evidence to form a theory, you know. But the kid dealing with it and telling them like the couple of things that he remembers, like, winds up, you know, kind of sending them off in a particular direction with their investigation. And Data winds up kind of spending a lot of time with the kid because he was the one who rescued him and is the, you know, like, so the kid feels the most safe around Data.
And this isn't necessarily because Data wants to do this. This is two episodes in a row of just Troy manipulation.
Yeah.
Troy sees what the kid's going through, and she's like, well, Data, you know, since you were his rescuer, there seems to have been some sort of imprinting going on, and I think it would be good if you just hung around him a little while longer until he gets his bearings.
Yeah.
And Data didn't really think to do this.
No,
until Troy urged it.
Right, and I think that, as much as anything, speaks to the fact that Data doesn't have any instincts to speak of. And like, he asked Geordi at one point, like, did you ever have, like, anything scary happen to you when you were a kid? And Geordi describes being caught in a fire as a blind five-year-old, which is a really scary story. It's, like, maybe the most humanizing moment that Geordi has had in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, it really is.
I think it affects Data, if nothing else. So, yeah, and like, Troy, like, conveniently can't read this kid.
If he's lying, I haven't been able to sense it.
Like, they're a little bit suspicious of the information that he's giving them. She's like, I don't know if he's lying or telling the truth or what. I can't read him right now.
And she never read Alexander either in the last episode.
Yeah.
For being such a primary character in two episodes in a row where her job is so crucial to figuring things out, it's odd that, like, her greatest gift goes unused.
I mean, I think it just also highlights how conveniently amorphous her gift is.
Yeah.
You can never, like, pin them to exactly what the extent of her power is.
Yeah, and in that way, it is a great utility for a writer of a show.
Yeah. I wonder what the show Bible says about Troy.
It's just a picture of a Lowe's home and garden center.
It's just actually a pinup of a four-breasted woman.
Oh, that's nice. Good one, Rod.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. If you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So they're trying to, like, figure out what's going on with this mystery and also help the kid go through the, you know, like, the Kubler-Ross stages, and eventually he gets to the android stage of grief, right?
Right. I think we're all familiar with the eight stages of grief.
Yeah, you've got denial, anger, android, bargaining, Klingon.
Orange cable knit vest,
right,
is one of the stages.
And acceptance.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think you just designed another t-shirt.
I don't believe this.
What is that acronym? That is a terrifically complicated acronym.
Yeah, who could even say, Adam? The kid is putting together, like, a model in his room. He's, like, playing with blocks in his room, and I guess he's living alone. It's another child who's been through a horrible experience, who's been given an apartment of his own to live in.
It's really cool. I remember watching this episode for the first time going, oh my God, that's the dream, right? You get your own condo and, like, some cool model building supplies.
Yeah, nobody is ever going to tell you to come to dinner, right?
All I ever wanted to do at that age was be alone and build models.
Yeah. There's no bedtime for me. I live by myself.
It almost goes without saying that I was terribly cool.
Data swings by the bachelor pad of this kid and he's like, hey, that model is not great.
Hey, nice model you got there. It actually fucking sucks. And Slickback does not take this criticism particularly well.
You hate it.
No, until Data kind of clarifies, he's like, I wasn't making a judgment, a personal judgment. I just say whatever's on my mind because I'm an android and I don't have feelings. And he's like, wait, that sounds amazing. You don't have feelings at all?
I kind of see the benefit of this.
Yeah, and, like, the kid is, like, he's really taken with Data at this point, because what he has seen of Data is that he can lift super heavy objects that normal people wouldn't be able to. He doesn't have to deal with emotional trauma, and he can build models like a boss.
Big Jim has satisfied women throughout the world, and the capital of Nebraska is Lincoln.
He can eat all the dessert he wants and not feel sick.
Yeah. Like this, like to this kid, Data's got it figured out. And so like they come back to the kid. I think Troy like shows up at his apartment that he lives in alone by himself like the next morning, and he
who puts him to bed? I have so many questions.
Yeah, who tells him to take a bath?
Wesley had more adult supervision than this kid.
And Wesley was like twice his age.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Wesley was probably 18.
Like, they're like, this kid is dealing with the 20 stages of grief. We need to give him a wide berth.
But Troy shows up and the kid has replicated like a B-minus Data costume. Like,
yeah, he's totally thrift store Data.
Yeah, yeah. And
like when I think we've all been there. You don't have the cash for a good Halloween costume, so you just sort of scrounge some things together. That's what he's doing.
It kind of looks like he got a black sweater and a yellow sweater, and he like safety pinned the yellow part onto the black part.
Yeah.
It like he fucked up the arms not being the same color as the body. But he's got as close to a Data uniform as he can get, and he's like twitching his head, and he's talking about how he's functioning within acceptable parameters. He is an android.
He's doing Data burlesque, and if you're Brent Spiner, and this kid is acting like you're supposed to act in every episode, do you find it a little bit insulting? Like it's that easy. Like, hey, I'm doing you. And it's like just sort of a shit impression. It's sort of like our impressions that we do on the show.
Yeah.
Except directly to the people.
Yeah.
I don't know. All I'm saying is if I were Brent Spiner, I might have complicated feelings seeing this kid do the head twitch.
It's sort of like...
While telling me, this is what you look like.
Like when my wife is, you know, I'm kind of a heat miser here in our apartment. My wife makes the case for putting the heat on and says, I'm cold. And I go, I'm cold. Like, I feel like the amount of shit I get is what I would expect for the amount of shit this kid gets for imitating Data.
Yeah.
I feel like this is probably the right point to confess this, Adam. This in some ways is more embarrassing than my West Hot American Summer adventure. There was like a brief, like a much briefer moment in my childhood where I remember attempting to convince some kids that I was an android.
I'm designed to exceed human capacity.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if this episode particularly inspired it, but I definitely was feeling that, you know, that getting a little hot under the collar that you get when you think about an embarrassing episode from the past. Like watching this kid do this was like kind of viscerally embarrassing to me.
Yeah.
And it's funny cuz the episode kind of deals with that, right? Like I don't want to jump too far ahead, but like when the kid is looking back at the fact that he was walking around mimicking an android, he cops to that being kind of a boner move.
That is correct.
Yeah.
It that really was affecting to me because I definitely did that.
Had you also killed thousands of people and we're trying to face it through the 14 stages of Star Trek The Next Generation grief. Because I could understand, Ben, if that's how you were processing it.
Yeah, I don't remember what inspired it, probably other than just like thinking I was a special and unique snowflake that needed to be treated as such by everybody?
I think the answer to this question is critical, Ben. Was this before or after the Wes Hot incident?
That is a good question, and I really wish I knew the answer. I don't think I could say definitively.
Because I could see, like, learning a lesson about doing an impression and not wanting to do it again.
Yeah.
But,
Well, like, introducing myself to Wesley, there was nothing implausible about it. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
I would just tell people.
No one had any reason not to believe that.
Yeah, I just say, like, hey, my name's Wesley, you know? Like, telling kids that I was already playmates with, like, hey, I don't know if you knew this about me, but I'm actually not human. I'm an android. That is a certain kind of madness.
You know, a bad haircut is going to make you do a lot of things that you regret.
Well, that's another thing about this episode, Adam, is that this kid's haircut is the haircut that I had as a kid.
A bad haircut will spin your life out of control. It's haircuts all the way down.
Yeah, man. Adam, I was in a barbershop the other day, and I told the guy that was cutting my hair, listen, the last time I got my hair cut, about a week later, I took a look at my sideburns and realized that they were about a quarter of an inch off. Like, whoever it was,
not insignificant,
that cut my hair last, like, fully blew it on my sideburns, and I almost wondered if it was a practical joke. It was so bad. And we, like, had a nice, like, laugh about how bad my sideburns had been the last time. Like, I'd gotten my hair cut somewhere else. It wasn't, like, I wasn't, like, blaming anybody there or anything. And I fucking got home, and I was shaving the next day, and the guy had blown my sideburns, like, by the same amount. There's no way that wasn't intentional, right? I think I had a barber play a prank on me, Adam.
It just doesn't get any better, does it, Ben?
No. When my parents were in charge of what my haircut looks like, I looked like that kid in this Slickback episode, which is probably why I thought it was a great idea to fucking walk around at, like, Sunday school introducing myself to people as an android.
A haircut is really one of the primary things in your life that you just give up total agency about.
Yeah.
Like, you are really giving it over to someone else to decide.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a major revelation in my life when I realized I could pay $15 and really play Russian roulette, or I could pay $40 and have somebody just do me right, you know?
It's an emotional banger when your sideburns are blown.
Yeah. It fucking sucks. Well, this has been not even Star
this
Trek Haircast. It's just been Haircast.
This has been a very personal episode of Star Trek Haircast.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurse than the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
Troy takes this newly android kid to 10 Forward and orders him, like, some ice cream or something. And I thought it was pretty artful of her not to order any chocolate around this kid. It's pretty inappropriate for... It would be pretty inappropriate for her to show this kid what it looks like when she eats chocolate, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's... he is not quite 13.
but, yeah, like, he is sticking to his guns on this I am an android thing. And so, like, the next scene is, like, a parent-teacher conference with Picard and Data and Troy. And, like, Picard's got a lot on his mind because he's like, there might be a hostile enemy force in this nebula with us, and this kid has the only working knowledge of what we might be up against, so we need you to, like, ply him for as much information as we can get. But also, like, he is dealing with some pretty major shit and has chosen to identify as Android American. And and so, like, and so
his when he fills out his census,
yeah,
he's checking other.
Right. And so like he we have to be sensitive to that because it's like part of his Kubler-Ross, but also like, can you please find out who our enemy is?
Yeah.
So the choice is made to let Data like really bring this kid into the fold, like make him as androidy as you can make him.
And he really starts from the top down, right?
This is like the slickback scene from which the series gets its name.
It's sort of like a Karate Kid style montage of like of Daniel, you know, working that wooden martial arts dummy and like sanding the floors and like waxing on and waxing off, except it's just Data with two hand brushes. Really bringing it back.
Yeah, slicking the bowl cut all the way back.
It doesn't look like it should be possible to turn a side part into a slick back with just two brushes, but he does it.
This also, I feel like, maybe, like, there's many scenes in this episode where I thought this kid did a pretty remarkable job carrying the fairly large task he is given as an actor. But, this perhaps more than anything, because I don't know if you've ever been around a kid who had a parent running a brush through their hair. Kids hate that.
Yeah.
And this kid like stays in character, like has a moment of genuine pathos while Data is like really going to town on his hair with two brushes.
He's experiencing some hair pathos, for sure. And as you've said before, something-something pathos in a bowl cut.
I guess I have said that before, Adam.
We get these vignettes of Data and him together where, like, you understand that Timothy's deal with this is like it serves as a coping mechanism for him, but it also just seems incredibly boring.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the scenes is them sitting in Data's quarters painting together.
Yeah.
And Data's painting like this verdant countryside.
Yeah. And Data's gone full Bob Ross on this painting.
Timothy's painting is like a festering hemorrhoid. Like with, which in and of itself is like a projection of his emotional state.
But it's kind of awesome, right? Like it's kind of an amazing painting. It's a way better painting than I ever did as a kid.
It's not bad.
Yeah, but
no one studies the painting for clues, though.
Yeah, no. Yeah, nobody is like, "What were you feeling when you painted this, Timothy?"
Yeah, it's so weird. They really, like, there's some transference here between Troy and Data where she's like, okay, go be a robot with him. and then give me your report later.
Right. I think that it's, like, after this that Troy kind of prevails on Data to start to bring the kid back, you know? Like, mm-hmm. She's like, now that he's been androiding around for 16 hours, it's time to start, like, the process of you talking to him about why you want to be more human, why humanity has such a pull on you. And
this is step 9. This is post android,
right? Yeah, like this is like the Pinocchio step.
Yeah.
Tell him why you want to be a real boy. And and like they, you know, they go to the like malt shop and have some sodies, and Data expresses that, you know, drinking a soda will never like be as delightful an experience for him as it is for a human, and that
I would gladly risk feeling bad at times if it also meant that I could taste my dessert.
And like that kind of adds up for the kid, like, and I think that it's starting to like the fact that he's starting to reconnect with his emotional life, it foreshadows the fact that he is starting to feel some like real full-blown guilt about what happened to the Vico.
Yeah, and this is happening concurrently with the study that the Enterprise is doing into the whole quote-unquote attack on the Vico.
Mm-hmm.
And things are just sort of not adding up. They have a little meeting in the ready room, and Geordi's like, look, guys, I can't find any sign of a boarding party. I mean, the entrances and exits are unused.
All of the points of egress and ingress.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all sealed up tight. There's no, like, phaser scorch marks around the interior of the ship. Like, I can't figure this thing out. And so they sort of press Timothy. They sort of interrogate him a little harder.
Yeah, and he really breaks. Like, it's like, because what he's been dealing with, we discover in this scene, is that he feels like he is personally responsible for the destruction of the entire starship.
It was me. I did it.
Because they got a banger dropped on them, and his arm flailed out and hit a computer panel. And it was like right then that the ship started getting torn apart. And they're like, hey, listen, like, that is what we call in the biz a coincidence.
The damage to your ship might have occurred at the same time your arm touched the panel. But it was only a coincidence.
It's not like that Far Side cartoon where the guy is fumbling for the seat recliner and he accidentally hits the wings fall off button instead. Yeah, so you know, I think that this, like the kid is still having feelings about it, but has gone through like the worst of it and is somewhat persuaded by their consolation that it wasn't his fault. And so
they tried a Goodwill Hunting him.
Mm-hmm.
I know. No, you don't. It's not your fault.
But yeah, so they go back out on the bridge, and like the Enterprise is getting shredded by this nebula at this point. Like they're getting hit harder and harder by bangers, and he's like, "This is just what it was like." And the crew keep kind of like checking in status of different systems, and he's like, "I heard that on the bridge. I heard that. I heard that." Conveniently, this kid was like in the command center when the starship that he was on was being torn apart. So he like knows what stuff they were dealing with. And Data starts like using the terms that Slickback has is recalling from his misadventure on the Vico.
Warp power to the shields. They said that too, Data. I'm positive.
But the Entrepreneur, like, they keep trying to like increase power to the shields. They're like shunting warp power to the shields, like boosting the shields every time they get hit, and they're about to get hit by the biggest banger yet, and Data's like, turn them off. And it's like, I feel like Data is the only character that does this, where he'll give an order that makes no sense and like will not explain it until you do it. Like he did this a bunch in the Romyarlin battle.
Yeah.
And like it always works out, right? Like he's always right, but he doesn't use the like plenty of time that he obviously always has to explain why.
For someone who does not feel emotion, he sure has a sense of drama.
Yeah.
So it turns out there was like an inverse correlation between all of the, like, they're throwing all these logs onto the shield fire.
Yeah.
And the hotter that shield burns, the more powerful the bangers are that are getting dropped on them.
Yeah. I feel like this is, like, it's not the first time that's been a thing also.
Yeah.
But, you know, Picard.
Yeah, Booby Trap was all about that, right?
Yeah, it kind of was. So Picard says, make it so. They drop the shields. The banger dissipates before it hits them. And
the irritation that Riker feels.
That's suicide, Data.
He's so disgusted by this plan. It's almost like, this is how I'm going to go out. Data, you fucking asshole.
Yeah. And like,
it's Riker, suicide, Data is really the perfect thing to say to Data, too.
Right.
Who
yeah.
has like a master's degree in suicide.
Every climactic episode that Data takes part in, you could say that to him.
Yeah.
Well, they...
Like Riker's not talking to the smartest thing he's ever talked to.
Right. Riker has the confidence of a cisgendered white male who has sex with whomever and whatever strikes his fancy. You know?
It's true. Yeah.
Too much confidence. So the button on the episode is Data and Troy looking through the like weird one-way interrogation room glass into the schoolroom, which is like, of course they would have that on this ship.
Yeah.
And you know, Troy is saying like, yeah, like he's at step 48 of the Kubler-Ross now. And Data's like, well, he doesn't seem better. And you know, the kid is not taking part in the round of row, row, row your boat that everybody else is singing.
Which is how you know he's not all better.
Yeah.
Because when you do the round robin, row, row, row your boat, that's just fun.
Yeah, you need everybody to get in on that.
Yeah.
What is it with
that? No Alexander to be seen.
No. What's it with that tune on this ship? They're either singing row, row, row your boat or Frère Jacques like all the time now.
Are those two songs that go across every language and culture? Like when you were to overdub this for Spanish language or whatever, like
that's a good point. Maybe it's for the international syndication market.
Yeah. You got to make those syndication bucks.
Mm.
Yeah. So a little bit of a sad button on this one. Sounds like he's going to be okay, but it's going to take some time.
Yeah.
So Data's fine, though.
It's going to be like at least a couple of sonic showers before he has all that pomade worked out of his hair.
Yeah.
Takes, you know.
Oh, man.
I don't know if you've ever, like, gone to a wedding or something and tried a new pomade or hair stuff, and then, like, you take your shower and it's, like, not really out the next day.
Yeah, it's going to take multiple washings,
yep.
I think. And those brushes are fucking ruined. The hand brushes that Data used. Like,
not the right kind of brush for that project.
Those teeth are going to be jacked.
Yeah.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I'm a sucker for a slickback episode, Adam.
Have you liked every slickback episode?
I may be wrong about this, but I feel like I have.
Yeah.
What I'm going to say is I felt real personal shame watching this one.
Yeah, if we're about what moves the needle emotionally, this episode sure does it. It packs emotional bangers.
Yeah. I don't know that it's the strongest episode, but it did what it set out to do, I think. I think it is successful on its own terms, maybe.
You think of the other two ways that this plot could have unfolded. Like, if Geordi's the guy to save him, does he imprint on Geordi and then get some weird lady vibes?
Yeah,
if he imprints on...
He's like, you know, like, fathers are really badly biased against in the courts when it comes to custody concerns. They're like, why are you talking about this kid? You're nine.
This is the future. Why are we letting women into the turbo lift before the men?
Yeah.
And if he imprints on Riker, like, I'm not sure that's a show that could even be shown.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
It had to be Data.
It could only be Data. I think I liked it too. I mean, I liked it for its needle moving. And, I mean, you can't just help but wince at everything that this Timothy is doing throughout. It's profoundly embarrassing.
Yeah, but really. I feel like that is, as an actor, one of the hardest kind of parts to play. So as a child actor, this character at the end is aware of how embarrassed like a kid might be about having done what he did. And And that's, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think that asking a kid to lean into experiencing embarrassment is maybe harder than asking them to lean into experiencing sadness.
Yeah, because, like, I don't know, someone said that part of being an actor is, like, suspending the ego. That has to be the most difficult thing for a child to do, a child of his age.
Right.
Especially, because that's almost all that you have.
Yeah. We don't have to talk about this too much longer, and I believe we have some sort of indication that subspace has information for us, Adam. Do we want to move on to priority one?
Let's do it. Let's check our messages.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, we have a commercial message this time around.
Yeah.
And it is for another podcast. Message goes like this. Ask yourself this. Do you have spiky hair? Well, this is a great episode for a hair reference, isn't it? Do you carry a sword that's twice as tall as you are? Are you imaginary? And is your dad a whale?
What's going on, Adam?
It's a bunch of questions. Do you have a soft spot for classic RPGs like Final Fantasy, Chrono Trigger, and Baldur's Gate? On Square Roots, we play through the best RPGs one chunk at a time. Vanessa, Matthew, Jim, and John take a look at the highs and lows of your favorite games, from memorable villains to insane translation errors and terrible minigames. Subscribe to Square Roots today.
Square Roots.
So it's an RPG podcast.
I really liked the game Chrono Trigger a lot when I was a kid. I'm kind of curious to listen to that arc of the Square Roots podcast. That sounds really fun.
I played a lot of these sort of D&D adjacent RPGs that were like, I played TMNT a lot. I played Rifts. I was very young and very cool, which sounds like the target audience for something like this Square Roots classic RPG podcast.
Yeah, I want to check it out. Sounds great. I really admire anybody that can get four people together for a podcast also.
Yeah, totally.
Scheduling a podcast is tricky enough with two people.
Yeah, the degree of difficulty on the Square Root show is far, far higher than ours.
Absolutely.
And I admire that greatly. Well, relive the glory days of classic RPGs with the Square Roots Classic RPG Podcast. It's like Let's Play for your ears.
Sounds fun. Adam, we have a personal message as well. This one is from Dumpling, and it is to Marshmallow. Happy Valentine's Day to my flatulent marshmallow boyfriend. Thank you for introducing me to Star Trek and this awesome podcast. I love you more than Deanna Troi loves her chocolate sundaes and more than Riker loves consent. You're the best. You're Dumpling.
The form of love that Dumpling is describing here might be the greatest combination ever described.
Yeah. It's a sincere form of love, Adam.
More than Riker loves consent. More than Troy loves chocolate. Together.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that possible. Nobody loves consent as much as Riker.
And Dumpling loves marshmallow even though he's totally flatulent.
Yeah.
Gassy marshmallow. Loves him anyway.
Yeah. That's a marshmallow. I hope you realize what you've got there.
Yeah. Yeah, hold on to Dumpling tight.
Yep. And don't let go. Two hands. Two hands, Marshmallow!
If you have a message that you want to tell the world, our sliver of the universe made up of our viewers, of either a professional or personal type, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Fill out a little form. You'll have us read your message on air. It's a fantastic way to support the show. Personal messages are $100. Business or advertising style messages are $200. And they help support the show.
They sure do, Adam.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a slick back drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I did find a slick back drunk Shimoda, Adam. My drunk Shimoda is, in fact, Timothy. there is a... we talked a little bit about the scene where he and Data are having a paint together.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having kind of a perfunctory conversation at first, you know, talking about yawning and this and that. And then Data really kind of starts to open up and have a heart to heart. And he turns over and Timothy has fallen right to sleep.
It's like, just asleep in his paint.
Yeah, like the second Data embarks on anything longer than a one sentence question or answer, it puts this kid to sleep immediately.
We're deprived of the face in the acrylic scene that I was really hoping to get.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
Yeah.
How about yourself? Do you have a drunk Shimoda?
Yeah, it's the scene where things are at their most intense, where the bangers are really getting dropped on them, when the banger amplification is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And Timothy and Troy are standing behind Data.
Mm-hmm.
Troy looks down at Timothy and she's like,
Timothy, perhaps you and I should go below and get out of everyone's way.
And Timothy's, no, fuck that, I'm staying. That moment where Troy says that line pretty much encapsulates her character and reason for being up until now.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I should just get out of the way is Deanna Troy's yearbook quote. You know?
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it from the last few episodes where she has been very much in the plot.
Right.
All up in it. But it just... her...
Maybe it's something that somebody writes in her yearbook, but she doesn't know who wrote it. Like, she's passing the yearbook around on the last day of school, and she gets home and discovers that somebody has left an unattributed insult in it.
Hey, have a good summer. Stay cool. Maybe you should stay out of the way. Yeah, sad.
Sad.
Yarmouk and Jalad at Tanagra.
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start, and these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scars. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off. Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give microdose gummies a try. So you get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVES. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVES for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVES.
Hi.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
What's coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is season 5, episode 12, Violations. Troy, Riker, and Dr. Crusher fall into unexplained comas while the entrepreneur plays host to an alien race. Do you remember this one, Adam?
So Gates, Sirtis, and Frakes are going to some sort of acting conference. Like, they get this episode off.
I feel like this is the one where Troy is being like sexually violated in her sleep by mind waves, and it's like an after school special about rape, but is deeply inartful and not a actually good exegesis on a very hard to discuss topic.
If we're not going to get a Denise Crosby turn to camera, how am I supposed to understand the issue at hand without that kind of inartful explanation?
Yeah.
Without being beaten over the head by it.
I don't know, Adam. And
I barely remember this episode.
I really wish I'd known that this episode was this season, because I would have saved my veto.
Rape dreams sort of jogged my memory, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's going to be a tricky one to make jokes about, I think.
One of the aliens has Bride of Frankenstein loaf, right?
That sounds familiar.
Like temple loaf?
Yeah. You might be right about that, Adam. Well, we could do research on that, but we will not.
Got to watch it anyway.
We sure do. All right. Well, if you'd like to discuss the show with our legions of viewers, use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter. It's at CutForTime to talk to Adam and at BenjaminRAHR to talk to me. We've also got Facebook and Reddit groups, which are lively and hilarious communities. And what else? We got to thank Adam Ragusea for many, many music tracks that he has now made for us, and Dark Materia for our theme song.
We have an EP amount of music tracks for our show now.
Yeah, we should like put it up on Bandcamp.
Yeah,
send the proceeds to our friends at the National Center for Science Education, maybe.
Right.
That would be a good move, right?
Not a bad move at all. Sounds right. Feels good. Let's talk to the goose about that.
We'll have a discussion with him. If he's not into it, we'll cut this part out.
That's fair.
Thanks to everybody. Thanks so much to the great folks at MaximumFun.org for all the help and support they give us. Really excited about our new Drunk Shimoda's Bar and Grill pint glass. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a very special episode of The Greatest Generation that you'll want to watch after school with your mom and dad around so you can talk about some important issues.
Make it so. Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.